Now, let us talk a little bit more about Babylonia, because that's where a number of the rabbis leave Palestine. Things get rough. There are some difficult moments. Of course, eventually in the 4th century, the Roman Empire will convert to Christianity. And Jewish life, in some respects, not in all respects, but in some respects, will decline in Palestine. In the meantime, when Jews come to a community where the Persians are living, they're treated very well. And we now know so much more about this community, and of course we know so much about it because of rabbinic literature. But clearly, the heirs of the Palestinian rabbinate continue to do their work in Babylonia, bringing with them the same rabbinic notions, the same rabbinic ideology, and the same institutions that they had established already in Palestine. Under relatively benign conditions, therefore, they flourish even more so for hundreds of uninterrupted years. So that then, therefore, we can trace rabbinic culture right up to the point where Muhammad enters the scene. In other words, particularly in the area of Babylon. Now, I should mention already that ancient Babylonia is more or less Baghdad in the 8th, 9th, and 10th century. Baghdad will become one of the major centers of Islamic civilization. In other words, right at the heart of where the rabbinic establishment is so powerful, we will see an encounter between Muslims and Jews. But that's coming in one or two more lectures. The last thing that I want to talk about in this lecture is the legacy of rabbinic civilization in both Palestine and Babylonia. In other words, what do the rabbis produce? What did they create? Their texts, and the significance of these texts for the study of medieval Jewish culture. The rabbis of Palestine already collected their oral interpretations that we spoke about, organized them radically in subject categories. In other words, remove them from following the biblical text and its order. They weren't, you know, they would read the Bible and comment upon it, but now what they did was to abstract these interpretations and reorganize them in such a way that they could be followed by subjects. Eventually, there appeared a work first in private and then publicly, which committed this to writing, these interpretations. This text was edited by a rabbi called Yehuda Nasi, Judah the Prince, and the text that he edited was called the Mishnah. The Mishnah became the foundation of rabbinic law, written around the years 200 of the Common Era. The Mishnah became the object of study, interpretation, and elaboration in the rabbinic academies, both in Palestine and in Babylonia as well. In other words, a class might consist of the rabbis sitting around with their students, opening up a page of the Mishnah, or however the Mishnah was written, in a manuscript, obviously. This was before print culture. And they would read a paragraph, and then they would interpret it. And their interpretation might sound like, not an interpretation literally, but actually a conversation about the text. If you had a stenographer or a tape, in a audio or video tape in their room, you would hear, well, Rabbi said, this is an interesting text, but, you know, doesn't it raise a logical issue? And then another rabbi might say, well, yeah, but I can figure it out by doing this. And then a third rabbi might say, well, but there's another problem here in the text. And where does this text go? And then the fourth rabbi will say, well, that reminds me of a story about a chicken. And then he starts to tell a story, and then they start going off, and like any live conversation, although, by the way, these texts were edited, so to assume that it's all live is an exaggeration. But nevertheless, what I'm trying to get at is the emergence of another text which will go alongside the Mishnah text, which we call the Gemara. Mishnah, Gemara, or in a different pronunciation, Mishnah and Gemara, however you like it, but I pronounce it with the Sephardic pronunciation, Mishnah Gemara. The Gemara is the exegesis on the Mishnah, the commentary, the stories, the asides, the discussion of the logic of the rabbinic law and so on. One Mishnah may be a little paragraph like this in a Talmud page, And then the Gemara may go on for 10 pages, 15 pages, 20 pages. In other words, it is much more elaborate. It is much more unwieldy. It is much more disorganized. In other words, if you think of the Mishnah and the Gemara as law codes, you're wrong. The Mishnah is more or less a law code. But the Gemara is an elaborate commentary. It is elaborate stenographer's treatment of a discussion of that original Mishnah going off in all kinds of directions.